The Guardian.
This is Politics Weekly Extra. I'm Jonathan Friedland. Now, I thought I wasn't going to have to bother you till the end of the week when I was looking forward to bringing you news of those two crucial Senate elections in the state of Georgia. But news broke over the weekend that made me feel we had to come to you early and break into your week with this extra podcast. And that is because of a development that proves that Donald Trump has not lost his capacity to shock. He may be on his way out the door of the White House, just 2 weeks left in office, but he has pulled off a true shocker that has had jaws dropping all over the United States and beyond. And that is the emergence of a tape in which he can be heard like a mafioso or a gangster putting the squeeze on election officials in the state of Georgia, pretty directly telling them to overturn the Democratic result of that state, which was a victory for Joe Biden. Now, luckily for me, my brilliant colleague David Smith, bureau chief for The Guardian in Washington, is on the road at the moment and he's in Georgia. But I was able to catch up with him so that he and I together could discuss this extraordinary conversation. And we began by talking about what this tape tells us.
This is an absolutely extraordinary phone call in which Donald Trump pressures Brad Raffensperger, who's the Secretary of State in Georgia, to essentially overturn democracy.
So, look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have.
This is part of Trump's crusade to subvert democracy and change the election result. Georgia is just one of the states where he's trying to do this. This phone call was made at 2:41 p.m. on Saturday and lasted about an hour. And you hear Trump saying over and over again, there's no way we lost Georgia, which in fact he did narrowly to Joe Biden, the first Democrat to win the state since 1992. And you hear Raffensperger pushing back frequently.
You know, the point
we
is
did going that, through each of those as well, and those numbers that we got, that Ms. Mitchell was just saying, they're not accurate.
And basically challenging Trump's false claims. At one point, for example, Trump says
the other thing, dead people. So dead people voted.
5,000 dead people voted in Georgia, and Raffensperger corrects him and says actually it was only two.
Well, Mr. President, the challenge that you have is the data you have is wrong.
Trump even makes a vague threat that Raffensperger and others in Georgia could face criminal prosecution if they don't do his bidding.
You know what they did, and you're not reporting it. That's a criminal offense.
But the Georgia state officials don't yield. And we can only speculate this conversation was probably recorded by them. It's reported that they wanted to then sit on it unless Trump made some kind of threat or disparaged them in some way, which he duly did on Twitter the following day. And that seems to have been the trigger for Raffensperger and his colleagues to release the tape first to the Washington Post newspaper.
I suppose what's shocking about it, there's lots. I mean, just the idea of the president strong-arming an election official. And anyone who's seen, as I did over the Christmas break, watching a few reruns of The Sopranos, you know the idiom of where this would be bad for you, you know, as if this is my, you know, this would be a great risk for you, Brad. This isn't good for you, you know, appearing to be concerned, but really threatening him.
And honestly, this should go very fast. You should meet tomorrow because you have a big election coming up. And because of what you've done to the president, you know, the people of Georgia know that this was a scam. And because of what you've done to the president, a lot of people aren't going out to vote.
But one thing that I think is interesting about the hour, and I'd like to hear what you say about this, Dave, is whether it goes to what has been a big question, which is, does Donald Trump question the election because it's just good politics and positioning for him to remain relevant, and he wants to feed a sense of grievance. And we've said this on the podcast before, that could, you know, build either to another Trump campaign in 2024 or just a Trump media empire, that grievance is the fuel for that. Or does he really believe this stuff? And one impression that this hour-long conversation seems to suggest is the latter, that Donald Trump believes himself that he won Georgia by a mile. At one point he says, you know, 500,000 votes, and it's very clear that we obviously won it, and therefore I genuinely have been robbed. What's your read of that question, whether this is fake and a pose, or whether in his heart of hearts Donald Trump really believes he's won and won big?
Yes, that's right. He says at one point, I won this election by hundreds of thousands of votes, and keeps repeating,
there's no way I lost Georgia. There's no way. We won by hundreds of thousands of votes.
There's no way I lost Georgia. And my interpretation is the latter theory, that he does genuinely believe this stuff. And I think there are two explanations for that. One is, you have to remember his media diet, which is full of right-wing conspiracy theories broadcast by TV channels such as the One American News Network and Newsmax, who have really embraced the claims of voter fraud and just fanned the Trump base with this idea that he could yet hold on to the presidency. Even Fox News, which has higher viewers, has not jumped in quite so much and earned Trump's wrath. And he keeps tweeting, don't watch Fox anymore. And he's upset that they don't back up his claims. The echo chambers of the TV networks and numerous blogs and websites that Trump digests, I think that has really shaped his worldview on this. He really does take the word of the true believers that the election was stolen from him. And then secondly, and more fundamentally, there is just Trump's self-perception. He cannot conceive of himself as a loser.
I mean, beyond his state of mind, there is obviously a legal question here. You know, it sounds terrible. It's sort of morally appalling to hear an incumbent president say, you know, to somebody in Britain, British terms, we'd call them the returning officer of an election, you know, find exactly this number. That's one more than I need to get the result my way. But so it sounds appalling. It sounds terrible. Everyone's been using words about undermining American democracy. Is it against the law?
That is being debated. There's certainly many experts who argue that it violates Georgia state law, where you're obviously not allowed to interfere with an election or coerce an official and so on. In purely practical terms, with Trump having less than a month in office, it's also thought to be pretty unlikely a case will be brought, and pretty unlikely it would be successful. There may also be grounds for some kind of national prosecution by the Department of Justice. But as so often with Trump in these circumstances, it remains somewhat vague and a grey area. And I suspect nothing is going to happen before an inauguration day on that score.
Yeah, I was quite interested by the take. George Conway, famously the husband of Kellyanne Conway, a counselor to the president, but also a lawyer, said that he thinks what the desperation that you can hear in this hour-long tape is all about isn't just the psychology, although it's definitely a thing, of Donald Trump not being willing to see himself as anything other than a winner, but also because he fears the day, January the 20th, when he will lose his immunity from criminal liability. And that is why he is desperate to hold on to power, because otherwise, on, you know, just over 2 weeks from now, he will face the full wrath of the law for all the various things he's done. Again, things we've talked about on this podcast. I mean, is that your sense too, that there's more than just psychology going on in Donald Trump's desperation in that conversation?
Yes, and some of the reporting in recent weeks and months in Washington has backed that up, that he's definitely fearful of criminal prosecution, and that is a motivating factor in desperately trying to hold on to power and overturn this election result. Preet Bharara, a former Manhattan U.S. attorney tweeted after this tape was revealed that the odds of Trump declaring a self-pardon just went up a bunch. It's long been suggested that he might try to pardon himself in some way, and as I think he sees the backlash, which includes Democrats calling for some sort of criminal prosecution over this phone call to Georgia, we may see some kind of self-pardon, which is yet another of those legal gray areas that, as you say, the framers never felt necessary to write down whether he actually can pardon himself. But I think from his point of view, it would gum up the works, at least in the courts, for some time as that got debated. But yeah, I think he's very aware of his legal vulnerability when he leaves office. And at state level, the New York district attorney has been stepping up their investigations in readiness for that.
And so all of that is for after January the 20th, when Joe Biden will be sworn in, the Department of Justice will be in different hands. Those are the sorts of things that could happen then. Between then and now, and admittedly, it is just really a fortnight, there is the only mechanism available, and I have seen a couple of people mentioning it, but is impeachment. Now, he's already been impeached. That's when the House of Representatives draws up charges against a sitting president and sends it over to the Senate for a trial. It sounds bonkers, but everything about this Trump presidency has been bonkers. Is it too late for Donald Trump to be impeached again? Could we see that as the closing act of the Trump presidency?
I think it's highly unlikely, but I agree one should never rule anything out. If you followed a certain logic there, you would say, well, surely this deserves impeachment by the House as well. Democrats do still control the House, but by a more narrow majority, so that would be a practical consideration. I think they would also be aware that there is virtually no chance of a Republican-controlled Senate going ahead with convicting Trump and removing him from office. But one reason to try for impeachment would be to set it down as official that Trump's punishment is he is never allowed to run for public office again. In the past, these things have been academic, and why would that have mattered? And no one ever thought someone like Richard Nixon, for example, might run again one day. With Trump, he's already been floating and teasing the idea of running again for president in 2024. And on the basis of this Georgia phone call alone, there would be a strong body of opinion that would be a threat to the 245-year-old republic and the Constitution, and just be disastrous in itself. So if you could stop him now from even considering that, maybe that'd be a good idea.
I mean, what I saw was people saying, look, just for the sake of it, have a hearing in the House, have a committee that just literally plays the tape of the phone call for an hour, so it's in the record, and then just says, you know, in effect to history, to posterity, look at this man. And so it is there as a documented second black mark against his presidency in the way that the first impeachment was.
There's definitely an argument in favor of that, because I think quite possibly with the first impeachment, Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, a Democrat, and others realized the end game was Trump's acquittal and that he might even get a political boost from that. But there came a moment when they realized you do have to send a message to posterity that this cannot stand, that 10, 50, 100 years from now, people need to be able to look back and say a president was not able to get away with this. And so again, there's that practical consideration that could be very damaging to any Trump prospects of running again in 2024. And in the meantime, in theory at least, could dent his popularity within the Republican Party, which is probably vital to try and get that back on track. Of course, then the counter argument is that Republicans would say this is a circus, this is a vendetta against the president, and it could actually whip up the base once more. So it's as ever with him, it's a tricky political calculation.
That's right. I mean, the point here is that nothing seems to move Republican opinion ever against Donald Trump. So let's just talk about that. We've been talking about how Democrats might react. What about Republicans, though? Is this going to be the line finally that where they draw the line and say that this is that Donald Trump has gone too far? Or will they once again do the usual trick where senators suddenly find that they when asked, say, oh, I haven't seen that story, or Susan Collins of Maine says, I'm troubled and concerned, but does nothing, or do they finally break from Donald Trump beyond the 11th hour, with this being the last straw?
I'm not holding my breath for a yes. break from Trump. And in fact, on Sunday, after this tape was published by the Washington Post, Senator Ted Cruz, who's become a Trump loyalist, was asked about it. And he did pull the old trick of saying to the journalist, you're trying to distract from the main business, which is the Georgia Senate runoffs, and writing it off as yet another Washington gossip story. And I think Republicans get out on this one will be what we talked about earlier. They will attribute it to Trump genuinely believing he was robbed, having legitimate concerns in his own view. We're already seeing that play out in how many Republicans have defended Trump's bogus conspiracy theories. And of course, it's coming to a head on Wednesday when Congress gathers to certify the Electoral College results. And we already expect 12 Republican senators and more than 100 members of the House to question the integrity of the election and effectively back Trump's claims. So they're so far in now. They've embraced Trump so much. Short of what he once said, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and not lose any voters. I think this phone call will join the grim pantheon.
Candidates are making their final stops with 3 days to go before the Senate runoff elections in Georgia. Interest in the race.
Now, you mentioned Georgia. You are in Georgia. What impact do you think this is likely to have on those runoff elections, which we should remind people, we've talked about it again on this show a lot, are so crucial. The balance of the Senate is on the line. Two seats are up. What impact do you think this call is going to have, if any, on those two contests?
I think it may have some impact, and negatively for Republicans, because it's another sign of infighting within the Republican Party in Georgia. That's been going on since Election Day. Trump has demanded that Brian Kemp, whom he once backed, should resign. Kemp is the governor of Georgia, because Kemp, like Raffensperger, has refused to overturn these results or entertain the idea there was cheating, as Trump perceives it. And now with this phone call, it will just deepen the narrative that the elections are fake and fraudulent and can't be trusted, that the whole process is corrupt. And that's a hard case to make when you're also saying, well, ignore all that and go and vote anyway for our Republican senators. And I think the evidence suggests, still a clear majority of Republicans will go and vote for the Senate candidates, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, anyway. But this might at least chip away and peel away some who just throw up their arms and say, the whole thing is broken. Trump has been robbed. Why should I bother voting for these Republican Senate candidates now? It's going to be stolen from them again. Whereas conversely, this is yet another shot in the arm, yet another reminder to Democrats that it's not just Trump, but the Republican Party itself has become rotten to the core, they would argue. And therefore, it's absolutely essential Democrats have control of the Senate and Joe Biden is able to enact his agenda.
That's right. You'd think it could be helpful for them. And the timing in a way is complicated because obviously, some people have voted already through early voting. I mean, that point you make about the Republicans, that goes for people who are actually still in the House and in the Senate. But also, you have there the former Congressman Mark Meadows, now Donald Trump's chief of staff. He's on the call with Donald Trump. I mean, it is amazing. There is just no restraining voice, is there, around Donald Trump to say, cool it, Mr. President. It does seem as if instead there are these enablers who are just feeding him this information and switching the TV away from even from Fox and putting on, as you said, OANN, the One America Network, or Newsmax, etc., just feeding him this stuff.
And really that reflects a process over the past 4 years where those who dissented and spoke up against Trump or did what chiefs of staff, for example, are supposed to do, which is tell the president what he doesn't want to hear and present him with counterfacts and unpleasant situations. All of those kinds of people have been systematically weeded out one after another. They've got their marching orders and they've been replaced by lackeys and loyalists and those who just reaffirm Trump, even in his most outrageous ideas. And that the chief of staff post is an example of that, where I suspect one of the former chiefs of staff, such as John Kelly, might at least have said something during that Georgia phone call or tried to rein Trump in some ways. And instead, Mark Meadows, who was a right-wing Republican in the House, is now party to this. They really have created their own alternative reality bubble.
Yes, I mean, there have been a couple of dissenting voices. Paul Ryan, interestingly, made a rare statement, the former Speaker of the House, and so immediately condemning this and saying it was bad news, and immediately prompted speculation that he's got his eye perhaps on being the voice of the moderate wing. I mean, it's mind-boggling that not overturning an election now makes you a moderate, but perhaps thinking about 2024. But I wanted, just before we close, to ask you about one other thing which on its face is unrelated, but had a few people wondering, and that is this op-ed piece by 10 former Secretaries of Defense who are still living, and there are 10 of them, many of them the Republicans, the likes of Donald Rumsfeld and even Dick Cheney, all saying that Donald Trump must not involve the military in this election dispute. And there's some wondering, some head scratching going on about why it would be that they would issue this call, this plea, unless they had picked up somewhere the fear that Donald Trump was about to somehow draw the military in, who knows, even use the military. And there is this line in the transcript, which again has had some people wondering, where Donald Trump says to the officials in Georgia, well, we have other ways, but we don't want to use those if we don't have to. People putting two and two together, maybe making five, but what's your read of these former defense secretaries telling the president to back off when it comes to drawing the military into politics?
Again, incredible, uncharted territory in American democracy and history, and it does imply that Trump could be cooking something up or considering it. That inner circle who are telling him what he wants to hear has included people like Michael Flynn, the former National Security Advisor who got a pardon, and Sidney Powell, who's an extreme lawyer with some pretty far out ideas, discussing in the Oval Office imposing martial law so that Trump could seize counting machines and carry out his own investigation. And just generally, there's an atmosphere that Trump is more unhinged now than he's ever been in the last 4 years, thinking the unthinkable, utterly unpredictable, so desperate to cling to power because of that threat of criminal prosecution, because he cannot accept being a loser, that what powers does a president have? The military in any country springs to mind. It's unfortunate for him. He's alienated the military in the past with some of the things he said. All of it is a reminder, really, that probably this time America got lucky because the coup plotters were just so incompetent and even clownish. But next time, maybe it won't be so unlucky if Trump had not been making ridiculous phone calls like this and not been so foolish and clumsy. If there's a future demagogue who's much more skilled, then the country really could be in serious trouble.
David Smith in Georgia, on that very sobering note, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, as we said, we're not even a week into the new year and already American politics is off to an explosive start. And I don't think there's going to be any change in that, because we're going to get, as I mentioned, the results of those two all-important Senate runoff elections from Georgia. For that reason, I will be back on Friday with The Guardian's Sam Levine so that he and I can run through what may well be one of the most decisive moments in the Joe Biden presidency, even before he has raised his hand to take the oath of office. Before then, do make sure to listen to Wednesday's episode of our UK edition of Politics Weekly, as Boris Johnson and his ministers apparently failed to present any kind of clarity to an extremely worried general public. But that is it for now. The show is produced by Danielle Stevens, and I'm Jonathan Friedland. It goes without saying, I really hope you're all keeping safe and well out there. And as always, thanks for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.